5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes.
Hello, welcome to the TV Zone Plus podcast, or this is probably really a lockdown quickie episode, because we're back in lockdown. We're back.
Yay.
We're back trapped again. Hello, I'm Paul Mount.
I'm Scott Holmes.
You certainly are, and you're on the screen of my iPad, and you look particularly gorgeous, I have to say. You don't have to tell me I look gorgeous as well, but you can if you want to.
Yes, you look gorgeous.
We're back recording episode 72 in lockdown. It's been a hell of a week. It's been a hell of a time for us because We tried to record an episode, a normal episode, which would have been about 3 hours long, to be fair, last Tuesday. But then, well, about 20 minutes in, we had a technical problem with the microphone, just collapsed and crashed, and turned what we were saying into complete gibberish.
So you I'm probably glad would... I spotted that before we actually recorded for a long time. Yeah,
that would have been a bit of a nightmare. The microphone just turned to static. We couldn't obviously record anything. So we decided to abandon that and go for a day out. But the day after that, we were plunged, or at least I was plunged back into lockdown. We're, as you know, we're both in South Wales, and the county borough that I'm in is contained in this new lockdown, which is going to last about 3 weeks. So I can't go to Scots, where we normally record. I suppose you could have come to me, but then I can't get out to you. Anyway, it's too complicated. So,
I can't because we're on essential travel only here as well. We're not officially in lockdown. But I think I was meant to visit my parents over the weekend, but I couldn't because it's over here we are on lockdown, not lockdown as such, but essential travel only, proof of that you're going to work and all this kind of stuff. And plus, we've just been announced that we've had 47 cases outside of testing. So they're reviewing what's going to happen. And it wouldn't surprise me that we'll be in lockdown like yourself.
Well, you're in the sort of county borough next to me, really. So it seems almost inevitable. If it's in this area, it's probably going to be going up. It's going up across the country, let's face it. The R rate, as they call it, the infection rate is up to 1.2. And we're heading towards this second spike that we all knew was coming, but it's just coming a little bit sooner.
Well, we all knew it was coming, but people still seem to not pay attention to what's happening. I mean, Birmingham recently, wasn't it? They're out there on the streets partying and stuff. And you just think, come on now, we've had a massive lockdown situation. It was horrible. It was a nightmare. Let's do our best to fix this. And people just don't seem to be bothered.
No, I think people just seem to think that once the restrictions started being relaxed, that meant, it's safe now, everything's back to normal. But the problem is, it isn't back to normal, and it's not going to get back to normal if people don't do what they need to do to help it get back to normal. And I don't think people will, which is why they're trying to do these localized lockdowns, because I think the government, for all their faults, know that the public aren't going to go back into a full lockdown again unless it gets so bad that it's imposed upon them. But it's going to be very difficult. Plus, we can't afford it, especially with Christmas coming up, which, of course, is the big sort of economic period for sales and things. I don't think there's going to be much for Christmas this year because
they can have a lockdown Christmas.
Yeah, the council have cancelled all the public events in my borough, so all the little markets and street things, that's all gone already. So that's going to happen across the country. People just have to accept it's going to happen. But to get through it, we just have to be sensible. And
if you're out there and listening and butting up with our on-screen personas rather than face-to-face, make sure you're all staying safe. Make sure you're all being sensible because, we want lockdown to be over. We want COVID to be an afterthought rather than a primary thought. Just be safe, be sensible, and, keep yourselves safe.
We're very lucky. We do like them. Would be nice if they got in contact with us, but there we are. we're very lucky that we've got lots of top quality entertainment on our TVs.
is true.
In cinemas and DVDs and stuff to keep us entertained while we're trapped indoors, which brings us to this particular episode. So, as I mentioned, we started recording what would have been a three-hour bumper-length episode 72, but have abandoned it. So we split it into three episodes of about an hour, which hopefully will all come out during the week, which will cover all that material. And in this particular first episode, we have a nice little mix of things to chat about. We've got two obituaries, unfortunately, two huge stars in the genre. Chadwick Boseman, of course, who passed away a couple of weeks ago, and Dame Dana Rigg, who passed away last week. Two massive figures from different generations, interestingly enough, but we have to pay tribute to them in our special way. We are going to be reviewing season two of The Boys, episodes 1 to 4 of the new series of the Amazon anti-superhero series, which is running weekly. Before we do that, yeah, you flagged up this thing on the weekend about these American viewers who are boycotting it and posting negative reviews because it's coming out weekly. What's the mentality of this?
I know.
With The Boys, they released three episodes and then the remaining five are coming out weekly. And some fans in America, I can hardly believe it. Tell the lovely people what they've been doing, Scott.
Well, people have been hashtag boycotting. I hate that term, hashtag. It's never been something I've ever used. But they've been hashtag boycotting The Boys because it's not coming out as one big chunk. It's coming out on a weekly basis, so there's been Twitter account messages, Facebook, and just social media all around of people saying we should boycott it because it's not coming out on a weekly basis. Which is just insane. It's absolutely insane.
The whole box set thing is fairly new phenomenon anyway. And I know it's a lot of teenagers and over-entitled people who are making these comments. But for God's sake, and they're literally saying, it's 2020. How can I have expected to watch my television like this? Well, television has been like this for 50, 60 years, and it wasn't a problem. It's only now that the model has changed, that people are binging on things. But
the thing
is,
binging is fun. I do enjoy a good binge. I did it with Cobra Kai.
Yeah,
but the sort of anticipation of waiting for the next episode is a unique feeling that doesn't exist with box sets and binging. You know, if you can watch every single one, you're like, oh, next episode, next episode, next episode. But then when you watch episode and it ends on a cliffhanger, that week of thinking, what the heck's going to happen next? Yeah. You know, it's a nice little gift of TV, which people just don't seem to appreciate.
It's the way that I always watched TV when I was a kid, because obviously we didn't have the internet. We didn't have all this culture. But it was great with Doctor Who. It was the classic example. You have a Doctor Who serial, you wait to find out what happens next week. I don't want to have, we do have these things available. And sometimes I do binge things. I've binged a couple of things recently because of certain circumstances. I binged Better Call Saul because I realized I hadn't watched that. Binged the last series of that over 2 days. It's not really binging. I'm just watching it over 2 or 3 days. But it's almost as if they can't wait to watch it all in one day and then go on to the next thing. And I just don't understand why they can't just accept that this is what Amazon are doing with this series. Why throw it all out there when you can let a series build naturally? And there's no momentum to a series if you just think, there it is, that's the whole thing.
I'm waiting for the phrase, I have a right to watch TV that should be released all at once. I'm waiting for the right to come into all of this.
I'm sure somebody said it already, but fortunately I'm not going to go and look at these people because, I've had enough, not trouble, but I've seen lots of comments online about something we'll talk about in episode 2 or 3, which is the new Blu-ray of Day of the Triffids. And I've seen some of the stuff that's been posted online about that. It's a beautiful DVD. It's fantastic. Bearing in mind, it was made in 1981. They've upscaled it. They've remastered it. They've cleaned up all the dirt and stuff. They've redone the credits in the style of the original. But people online are going, they've butchered it. They've ruined it. They've filmized it. So, but they haven't. It looks to me just like it did. It's beautiful. And I just had to turn off some of this stuff. I posted a review on the Starburst website of it, and I just think it looks great. And I know there have been comments on Twitter about it, people criticizing me. But I think, get a life. This is just a good quality television picture. The original exists if you want to look at the original. And the whole social media thing, we've gone on about this before. people have too much opportunity and too many platforms to talk nonsense about things. And you just have to turn off from it. But this thing about the boys did particularly strike me when you told me about it last week. I thought, really? Are people that desperate, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, and they're complaining because they got to wait a week to watch a television episode? I mean, what chance has humanity got?
It's a scary thought and a scary world. But, you know, there are sensible people out there like yourself and myself and our wonderful listeners who appreciate these things.
Well, I hope so.
You know, so, you know, I love binging, don't get me wrong. If I really enjoy a show, Cobra Kai, yep, went through it, sat there till 4 a.m. because I could not stop watching it. But if it wasn't available to me as a full section like that, I'd happily wait the week by week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in the next lockdown quickie. I did the same. I binged the first episode very quickly. I binged 5 episodes in a row. And that was early in the morning. I thought, I want to watch more of this, but I'm tired. And then I finished the rest of it the next day. And now I'm working my way through the second series. I'll have finished it by the time we record the episode talking about it. And I can understand that if it's something that's really, really good, you do want, if it's available to binge, you will binge it. But I don't mind if it isn't. I don't mind if it's not available to binge. I'm happy to wait a week.
Embrace the anticipation of the next episode. It's one of the benefits of having a weekly show. Yeah. You know, I love that vibe, and especially where you can contact me. And, you know, I could give you a call and say, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen next? You can have discussions like that don't happen anymore. People just kind of go, yeah. It's like with the Star Wars films, that the recent trilogy. When the first film came out and the parentage of Rey was being knocked about, you know, people were discussing it, thinking about it, wondering what it was. I knew from the off she was going to be a Palpatine, quite smug about, although apparently there were discussions I found out recently that she was going to be a Kenobi. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I always thought,
well, I'm still here now.
You dropped out. All I heard was Nobi, and I thought, she's not a nobody.
She's gonna be a nobody.
She's a nobody.
Well, that was actually the plot of episode 8, that she was a nobody. So the discussion of being excited for the next episode of a show. It still exists in movies because, you know, Marvel are prime examples of that. You know, what's going to happen? You know, when we had Endgame approaching, there were loads of people thinking, what's this going to happen? Where's it going to go? So, but TV has the right to do it. And, you know, like you say, for years upon years, it's been a weekly program thing. It's just because we've got the internet and streaming services that has changed a bit, and it's nice to have the choice.
But I don't think people should expect everything to be delivered as a box set. Some things suit it more than others, and I think The Boys suits being episodic personally.
Yeah,
because it's not something that I don't think I would binge, but we'll talk about that when we talk about the series. But I think it works episodically. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just
that's just nonsense. I'm putting negative reviews on Rotten Tomatoes to try and bring its ratings down. I saw one bloke who said, "That's fine. I'll wait until they cancel and watch it all in one go." Well, isn't that just extremely selfish? You know, it's me. That's the world we're living in. It's the me world, isn't it? It's what I want, not sharing what other people might want. It's what I want, and I want it now. Oh, I hate the world.
On the basis of that, should we talk about some good people of the world that we've actually lost?
Yes. Before we do, just to finish off what we're talking about, we're also talking about the X-Files part 2 of I know I got distracted into a rant as usual. We've got part 3 of exploring the X-Files, where you finished the first season of the X-Files. We'll talk about the,
I believe it's part 2.
Is it part 2?
Yeah. I watched half a season.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So time goes so quickly. So part 2 of Exploring the X-Files, where you've seen the back end of season 1. So you can give us your thoughts about those episodes, not necessarily individually, just favourite episodes and how the series develops. And then we'll probably finish off with a few news items, and then we'll leave it there until the next episode, which hopefully we'll record in a couple of days' time. How does that sound?
That sounds wunderbar.
Marvelous. So, yes, as you were saying before I jumped in, we're going to talk about a couple of heroes who have passed away recently. The first of them being Chadwick Boseman, of course, who we know as Black Panther from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, passed away a couple of weeks ago at the age of 43 from that damned disease. And yeah, there was a huge shock because, of course, nobody knew that he was suffering apart from obviously his family, friends, so on. He decided to keep it private, but it was a hell of a shock when he passed away. And a hell of a loss as well, because not only was he a great actor, one of the things I said in the bit of the podcast that we recorded last week was that I don't think we appreciate quite yet what a loss he was, because I think he is a genuinely, or was a genuinely important voice in the discussions about diversity and representation and the Black Lives Matter thing, because he dealt with it in a dignified and intelligent way. He wasn't shouting and screaming and tearing down statues. He was representing his culture and Black people in a very positive, non-confrontational, non-controversial way. And I think that's important in a world that's inflamed by arguing about this and arguing about that. He was a middle line that was just doing what he did and creating a good role model for people, Black and white. And I think we'll miss that.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, his acting prowess, you know, we got it with Black Panther, and Black Panther's a very top-rated Marvel film. We obviously saw him first in Civil War, and he was a great addition to the Marvel cast. It's unbelievable that somebody of that age can go, especially somebody of that kind of, he was a good soul as well. Always doing things for charity and stuff, but he wasn't. You know, a lot of people do things for charity and then they shout loud and proud about it to try and get the publicity. He never shouted loud and proud about it. People knew he did it, but he just did it. And he was, you know, but whenever you hear kind of stories about Chadwick Boseman, you never heard any negatives. You know, so not only was he, you know, phenomenal actor, he's played some great roles as well. Not films that I've ever seen.
I do want to seek out some of his work now, because he did a film about James Brown, the soul legend, called Get On Up, which I wanted to see for ages. I've just never got around to it, so I will try and catch up with that. And this thriller, 21 Bridges, which came out earlier this year. And I think he's got another film. There's another film which he completed before he passed away, which is to come. But yeah, like you say, he was a great actor. And once he died, we started seeing all these photographs of him visiting cancer wards and seeing, this is when he was ill himself. Selflessly visiting these kids, because he knew that Black Panther had made that impact with people. And I think for us, we're so used to white superhero characters, we take them for granted. But yeah, he's the first Black superhero, and that does mean a lot. And I've said in the past, I've been a bit sort of sniffy about the idea of role models, because I you know, the idea of looking up to a fictional character saying I want to be that person is not, doesn't work in my psyche. But I can understand how it did with Black Panther for Black kids who haven't had that figure before. You know, all of a sudden, you know, there's a character who looks like me. And I think that was a big thing, that it's easy to underestimate it.
Well, what's always nice with these, because, you know, growing up as a kid, I looked up to superheroes and stuff like that. But behind the superhero, the actor, the fact that he was a nice bloke as well just amplifies the the sadness of losing him, especially at such a young age, to this horrific disease that, you know, the human race just can't seem to get rid of. It's such a tragic loss when anybody goes to this bloody disease that, you know, it's such a scary word. And it's unbelievable how he dealt with it in such a respectable manner, that he didn't use the disease to further his career or anything like that. Nobody knew about it, and he just carried on doing what he was doing, and he did it with such prowess that, you know, it's just a massive, massive loss and a massive shame. And
I think that's the dignity of him, though, that he didn't make a big deal out of it. I mean, people with cancer deal with it in two ways. They either make a public announcement about it, if people in the public eye make a public announcement, or they keep it quiet. And I think they're both valid, because people get support and it makes them feel stronger. They draw from that. But some people want to keep it amongst their family and their community, and that's fine too. But again, it's the dignity of the man. And I think that I think he could have done a lot of good going forward in this sort of constant upheaval that we have about diversity and representation. And there's a lot that needs to be done. And I think he could have been in the forefront of it and doing it, as I say, in a very intelligent and civilized way. And I think that's what we're going to miss, as well as we're going to miss him as a great talent.
It'll be interesting to see what Marvel do with Black Panther, because it's a very dangerous and sensitive subject now, obviously, because Black Panther is still relatively prime in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's still a character that we've lost, like Captain America and Iron Man and stuff like that, apart from obviously the Black Widow film. But it's going to be difficult to, because it's not going to be a case of replacing him, because he can't be replaced. He was Black Panther. He was the Black Panther we know and love, but they're going to have to go somewhere with it if they want to keep Black Panther in. I just hope, and I got a lot of faith in Marvel to do this, as long as they do it respectfully and such, then,
But, I think
you see all the comments from the other, Avengers characters and actors and stuff, and, the got nothing but good things to say about him.
Yeah.
And,
well, I think everybody says that. We shall see. I mean, I there are rumors that Shuri, his sister, might step up to become the new Black Panther. I think in the mythology of the Black Panther, I mean, his father was a Black Panther, so I think there's probably room to do something with it. But I'm sure Marvel will do the right thing, because they don't tend to let me down. So we'll see what they come up with. But beyond that, that's such a young age. Yeah, that's an incidental thing, really. It's just a shame that we've lost him at that age, when he had, he'd just broken through. The last 5 years, he was a name that people knew. So he was quite sort of mature to have that breakthrough. Most people sort of do that in their 20s and early 30s. But he had so much left to give in the film industry and culturally. And I think that's the big loss as well. That's Chadwick Boseman's Black Panther is no longer with us. Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever.
Yes. We also lost last week Dame Diana Rigg, who is...
Massive name.
A massive name since the 60s when she first appeared on TV. Obviously best known for playing Emma Peel in The Avengers. You will know her as What's-Her-Face from Game of Thrones.
Lady Tyrell.
That's the one. She appeared in Doctor Who a few years ago, but her body of work is just incredible. A powerful stage actress. I think that was her main sort of thing, acting on stage. I think she did a lot of stage work that was very well received, and that was her main focus. But for most people, certainly people of my generation, it's Emma Peel in The Avengers, is where she played this, and very quietly, without fuss, this huge feminist icon. Don't forget, this is the 60s when you didn't have strong female characters. You'd had Honor Blackman, who played Kathy Gill, who also passed away this year, so it's been a bad year for the Avengers, playing these strong, powerful women who were the equal of the male characters. But it was no big song and dance about it. It was just she was there fighting alongside Steed, cracking quips, getting involved in the storylines. And I think that was what was important about that particular character and what she brought to 1960s culture. And, of course, we mustn't forget, of course, that she left and became Mrs. James Bond in On Her Majesty's Secret Service when she married Bond in the film starring George Lazenby, which I still maintain is one of the very best Bond films. I think it's been rehabilitated over the years.
It's the original Bond, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, it's proper Bond. And, I think it's... I mean, she was 82. So, again, we mourn what she's left behind. She's left a massive body of work. We're not mourning the fact that obviously it's tragic that she's died for her family and her friends and her fans, but she had a good innings, as they say. We're mourning her passing and celebrating her passing as well, rather than saying, what a shame that she's passed away. It is a shame. And again, it was cancer, which came on, she was diagnosed in March, but still working. She's got, she's just been in the new version of All Creatures Great and Small, which has been playing on Channel 5. And I think the very last thing we'll see her in is Edgar Wright's new film, One Last Night in Soho, which is still in post-production. Okay. So I think she's in that. So that's the last time we'll see her. But no, I mean, an absolute legend. And I think when these legendary people pass, it really, certainly for me, it strikes home, blimey, time is rushing by, because she was a constant in the 60s in The Avengers and then in Bond, when she popped up in things, a real proper presence as an actress and a legendary figure.
Fantastic actress. I mean, when she played Lady Tyrell in Game of Thrones, she was fantastic in that. So...
I think I saw her one or two episodes, and she was, that character seemed to be sort of this, I don't know how involved she was in the overall plot, but she seemed to be the sort of wise old woman who was sort of advising people and, you know, dispensing wisdom.
She comes into play with Lady Marjorie, who she's basically trying to get Lady Marjorie into the throne. So she was like conniving, but in a very sort of lovely way. You know, she knew how to play the system, and that's what her role was. When she wanted Marjorie to become queen, which was quite difficult because she had Joffrey on the throne and stuff like that. So, you know, it was quite awkward. But, you know, yeah, that character, she kind of knew what she was doing. She knew how to play the Game of Thrones. In a sort of a sweet but conniving way. And very good character as well. Very well performed.
Was she in it right the way through to the end? Was she in the last series? No, she wasn't. No spoilers.
She was not.
So, yeah, there's Dame Diana Rigg who's left us. A massive loss, but a massive... just because she was such a huge influence on people and such an important part of 1960s pop culture. And, of course, she was in one of the better Matt Smith Doctor Who episodes, The Crimson Horror, which was actually filmed a couple of miles away from where I live now, in a little town called Butetown, which has got these sort of Victorian-style houses. So, stone's throw away. So, yeah, Dame Diana Rigg. A great talent who will be missed. Right. Let's brighten things up with a... Good Lord. Let's brighten things up with a TV review. Well, I say brighten things up. Season 2 of The Boys that we were talking about a moment or two ago, with the overreaction from fans about not being able to binge it. Second series of this anti-superhero series, which carries on for the first series. More of the same. What do you think of it, Scott? You've seen the first four. We've had the first three. Episode 4 came out Friday. You've caught up with them all. Thoughts?
I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's a bit of a calmer pace than the first season was. The first season was almost constantly sort of on edge, panicky. And it's got a lot of that, you know, continuation, but there's a lot more sort of lower base conversation points and things like that, because after the sort of big ending of the first season, things are a little bit more intense. The boys, as it were, are a little bit more undercover rather than being a bit more forward. It's still really good.
For those who haven't seen it, can you tell us who the boys actually are?
So the boys are a collection of people who are fully against the superheroes and Vought, which is the big government company that the superheroes technically work for, represent. Now you've got Butcher, who's played by Carl Urban. He's got a personal vendetta because his wife was murdered by one of the Seven, who were the sort of like the Justice League of this world. He was murdered by Homelander, who is the Superman figure, but a little bit more of a weird, creepy.
He's a power. He's sort of a control freak. Psychopath, really, isn't he? He wants to be in control of everything and everyone, and it's what he says that goes, except it doesn't very often.
At the same time, he wants to be controlled, which is a little bit of a freaky thing that happens every now and then. But it's very nitty and gritty, the series, and it keeps that sort of vibe with the with these four episodes. They released the first three, obviously, last week, which is a clever idea, because the first two episodes were very low-key. They took their time to get in, and then the third episode really kind of kicked up. So it was great to have that cliffhanger to lead on. I watched the fourth episode again. It's quite a low-key episode, but, you know, it's giving a sort of little secrets that you didn't know about coming into it. And there's a lot of, like, backstory building up. Lowe's coming with Citizen Star, which is, the kind of, she's the superhero that's working with the boys in like a covert way. So there's a lot of story going on, a lot of stuff happening, and it's quite nice to watch and enjoy. All the characters are really, you know, relatable still, you know, in their own unique way. It's still very gory when it gets to that fact. And episode 4, you know, had a lot of kind of very creepy moments. Have you seen episode 4?
Yes, watched it yesterday.
So the creepy moments, you know what I'm talking about, yes, with the doppelganger and stuff. Yeah. So
that was just weird.
Yeah, it's very strange, but I think that's, this is in relation to Homelander, and I think that makes him scarier, you know, because, you know, he's got all this stuff going on where he's this all-powerful person, but he's still human, you know, because all these superheroes, you always have Superman, all this powerful power, he's from another planet, and he's, you know, truth, justice, in the American way.
Yeah,
you don't get that with these characters. And I think this season's kicked off really well. I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to seeing where the story goes.
Well, the characters, the seven themselves, are all, as you say, very much based on the Justice League, with Homelander is Superman, Maeve is Wonder Woman, the A-Train is Flash, the Deepest. It's very much playing on those stereotypes, those characters we know.
They're run by a government company and stuff like that.
And of course, this series, the secret has come out that they're not natural superheroes. They've been given their powers by this drug called V, which they've been given, which gives them their superpowers. And of course, that's starting a bit of unrest now. Everybody wants to have access to this. Everybody wants to be superheroes. My take on this series is, I think it's very good, but it's probably not, for me, the right series at the right time, because the world is a bit grim and dark and, you know, very downbeat at the moment. I'm looking for something which is a bit more uplifting, a bit more, brings a smile to your face, which is some of the other shows we'll be talking about this week have done. This I find a bit dark, a bit bleak, and I've got no problem with that normally. I think it's good to have things that are mean you've got to focus on them and, you know, show the bad side of human nature. That's always interesting dramatically. I just think at the moment I'm not in the mood to watch these quite unpleasant people, because everybody in it is quite unpleasant. Even the boys, they're not, you know, they've got their dark side.
They're not friendly.
They're not people that you'd say, they're not hero figures, even though they're sort of anti the Seven and anti-V and Fortnite. They're still not people that you would root for, want to spend time with. And when you, like, I watched...
Except for LM. Mother's Milk is lovely.
Yeah. And Storm... Searchlight? Stormlight?
Stormfront?
No, not Stormfront. Starlight.
Oh, Citizen Starlight.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would spend some time with her, but that's another thing. They sort of... I just think I put it on episode 4 last night, and it was, oh my God, it's an hour and 8 minutes. And again, it's this problem that we have with these streaming shows. They don't know when to stop. You mentioned it yourself. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of conversation. There are lots of scenes, which are just people sitting around talking. And I understand that adds colour and flesh to the characters, but you sort of think it's not really moving the story forward. That's often a problem with the streaming services that allow these programme makers to just fill these things with padding. And if these episodes were 45 minutes, standard 45 minutes, the pace would be better. The story would move. There's a lot of people sort of talking about things that we know because we've seen it. And I just wish they would get on with it. And you mentioned yourself about how the pace is different this time. In the first series, I think the first series shocked quite a lot because we weren't expecting it. But there's less of that, which is quite good. Even though I think the banner thing on Amazon Prime says more gore, more decapitation. You think, oh, you just sort of, is that really what you're going for? But it hasn't actually been too much like that.
No.
But I think the trouble is the superheroes are spending a lot of their time just walking around corridors and in the offices talking to each other. And I know it's not about them doing, it's not about them being superheroes, but you'd like to see them use their powers a bit more. You see Stormfront sort of dropping out of the sky occasionally, but you don't see them Homelander. You don't see them being what they're supposed to be. And I think you need a bit more seeing them use their powers a bit for whatever reason.
And I think that's the point of the show, though, is because they're basically advertisements, sort of faces of this company, which is what we have in this day and age.
Yeah.
You know, we have all these companies and businesses with these front-facing characters and things, and these are just their versions of that. They, I don't think, you know, they're not there to be superheroes as such.
No.
You know, that's just a sideline for them. They're there to be the faces of this company. And I think that's the interesting thing with the character Stormfront, because she's down with all that.
Yeah. She's a new character who's come in this series, who's the new member of the Seven, who, as you probably know by the name, you can gather what her background is. And that brings in the whole racism element into the storyline, which is interesting, an interesting thing to add to the mix. I think my whole problem with the whole series is, the first series was, what if superheroes were bad? And this series is, yeah, what if superheroes were still bad? There's not really, I don't know where else they go with it, really, to sort of make
the point. I was actually thinking about that when we were watching it. It's like, how long can this series run for?
Yeah.
Before it gets stale, they have to come up with something. Because I'm thoroughly enjoying it, and I'd quite happily have it go along if the ideas are good.
Yeah.
But you know, in my head, I'm thinking, can this keep going for long?
Well, there's a third series has been confirmed, but I'm the same. I'm sort of this is just, you know, it's playing the same, telling the same story, really, just in different ways. You know, we know that Homelander is bad, but he's still bad. He is even worse. He is really unpleasant. He's played by Anthony Starr. It's a great performance of a really unpleasant character. But we knew he was unpleasant from the first series. It's just adding layers to it. And I just feel that it's the point of it, really, is what if superheroes were bad and created not naturally but by drugs? Well, we had that in the first series. It's just more of it. That's fine if you want more of it, but I'd like to see something else into the mix to keep my interest up. And as I say, it's, you know, at the moment, not necessarily wanting to spend time with such unpleasant people. I'm looking for something a bit brighter, because it's a dark, grim world at the moment, and I don't necessarily want that. I don't necessarily want that reflected in my TV at the moment. I'm not saying I've got a problem with it. I will watch it, and I'm enjoying it. It's very well made, but it's not comfortable viewing. I just want comfort viewing at the moment, I think, really.
Comfort viewing, comfort food, please.
Marks out of 10 for the boys, episodes 1 to 4.
7 out of 10.
Oh yeah. I thought you'd given it more than that.
Yeah, it's definitely. It'll probably get more when the series is complete.
Yeah,
but I think I'm just waiting for more. You know, I might start boycotting if it doesn't come out as a binge.
Well, yeah, I'm going to demand that Amazon send me links to the remaining 3 episodes. To hell with it. I'm going to give it 7. I'm going to give it 7 as well. It may well be easy by the end of the series as a whole thing, because it's almost like the second volume of a book. Of course, it's based on a comic strip anyway, so it could be like a second volume of a book series, and it comes together at the end. I think the first series did, but at the moment it just seems to be dragging its heels a bit and just telling the same story as the first season. And I'm sort of thinking, well, I know all this. I know these are bad people, and it's an interesting idea to have,
the thing behind Simon Pegg in the show?
Well, he was Hugh's father in the first series, wasn't he?
Yeah, do you know why he was Hugh's father?
Because he looked like him in the comic strip, was it? Something like that?
Because in the comic strip, Huey is actually based on his character from space.
That's right. I knew it was something like that. He was, He's not in the series. He wasn't killed in the last series, was he? I can't remember.
See, I'm pretty sure he's not in the comic books.
No.
But I think what they wanted to do was, because Huey is basically supposed to be Simon Pegg, I think they threw that in as a fun Easter egg.
Yeah.
To have him in it, which I think is a fantastic little nugget to do.
Yeah.
Huey is based on Spaced. Simon Pegg's character is Spaced. So making it, you know, bring him in as a father, because obviously he's too old to play Huey. So bringing him in as a father, so it was a nice little touch when I found out all of that.
That's right. I remember that vaguely, that he looked like the character. Perhaps I'd forgotten that the character was based on him rather than the other way around. And yeah, it was nice to cast him to play that part. It's quite nicely done. But I don't think he's in this series, as far as I know. He
certainly hasn't been. But I don't think he's meant to be in the series at all. No. I think they did it to give that nod to the actor and the kind of connection. The boys, give it a look.
Boys is on Amazon Prime. New episodes dropping every Friday. I think there's four more to go. I think it's an 8-episode series. So
yeah.
we might go back to it to give an overview of the whole series when we've seen the whole lot. That's The Boys on Amazon Prime. Hey, let's go exploring those X-Files.
Mulder.
Mulder, it's me.
Mulder, it's me.
Mulder, it's me.
Hi, it's me.
Mulder, 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 it's me.
Scully.
Scully, it's me.
It's me.
Scully, it's me.
Scully, it's me.
Scully, it's me. Where are you?
Scully, it's me. Where are you?
Scully, it's me.
Such a classic piece of music, isn't it?
It's great.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. There we are, season 1 of X-Files. You finished season 1. I've watched another 2 or 3. Yeah. But I've seen them all already, so I'm going to work my way through them, but not at that speed. I've seen them all before anyway. I think the last time you got as far as space, I think it was, about the astronauts when the ghostly sort of thing that seemed to possess him. And since then, you've rattled through the rest of the series. It's not like with Doctor Who, where every story is different. You can dissect them because they're very much the themes of the X-Files were alien conspiracies, strange, freakish things, bizarre, inexplicable phenomena. I'm just looking at the list of stories after that. We've had, I think the last one that I saw was, in fact, Fallen Angel, which was...
That's the UFO crash.
So I've done 10. You've done all the rest of them. We had Eve, which was about the twins. Fire, which is the pyrokinetic chap. Beyond the Sea, which I think you particularly enjoyed. Gender Bender, Lazarus, Young at Heart. We had the return of Tombs, of course, in the sequel to Squeeze. Out of the rest of the second series, then, first of all, an overview of the whole first series, rather. What do you think of the first series as a whole?
Brilliant. It's just so well done, so well put together. Little niggles, like, I said it last time, I'll say it again. Scully's just ignorance in believing that there's something extra out there that's beyond explainable.
That was always a problem throughout the whole series. She was always skeptical, despite the fact that she'd seen monsters and freaks and God knows what. But she was always, Mulder, can't be that. And that did stretch credibility a little bit. But the chemistry between the two of them is just instant, isn't it, on screen? They sort of work so well together. Not just that will they, won't they thing, but as a professional couple of FBI agents, they look the part, don't they? I can't say.
That's a yes.
you have to wait to find out.
Some of my top picks for the second half of the season.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Beyond the Sea, I thought was brilliant. It's also got the, I always forget his name, but he was in Deadwood. He played Grima Wormtongue in the Lord of the Rings trilogy as well. But Beyond the Sea was really, really good. Sort of psychic sort of role and stuff. Really enjoyed that story. It just, because you start off with Scully's father.
That's right. Yeah,
he passes away.
That's right.
And he kind of says things to her that makes her think, oh, that is my dad. You're saying what my dad would call me and stuff like that. Again, weird reason for her to start not believing straight away after. But, that was a very, very good episode. Ended quite bleak as well, with the execution and stuff like that. But really, really good.
Yeah.
Gender Bender, I thought, was brilliant. The guy that can basically change his gender whenever he wanted, look like a woman, look like a guy. But I loved the sort of, I forget what you call them now, but the people that get rid of technology altogether, what are they called?
Amish?
Amish. Amish. Yeah. I love the whole atmosphere of that sort of setting. The bits when you see the guy / girl run around sleeping with people and killing them and stuff. It was interesting, but it was the Amish sort of atmosphere that was very, very. And then I think I might sound a bit like everybody else here, but Toombs was a great, great episode.
Toombs is great. And it was very exciting when he came back, because we sort of thought, oh, he's going to come back. He's going to be like a regular returning villain. And I quite liked the idea that they were building up these characters who could come back as like regular enemies. But unfortunately, it didn't happen. We never saw him again, which is a bit of a pain. I think there's a lot we could have done with him. What do you think of the episodes then that do build up this sort of mythology of the conspiracy? I'm thinking of the season finale, the Ellen Meyer flask, where this got this stuff about the conspiracy, which is threads right through the whole series and does bog it down eventually. How do you think it develops here? Do you think it's interesting, or do you prefer the standalone monster sort of weak episode things, or the freaks?
It's definitely interesting because there's this sort of what I'm guessing is like a cloning facility or something like that, you know. So it's definitely interesting, but I think because most of this season is standalone stories, I haven't quite got that vibe of having a overarching story yet. I've just watched one episode where, you know, this story has happened and it hasn't quite finished yet. So if it does kind of completely carry on throughout, it'll be interesting to see how I feel about it then. It's just a one episode.
Yeah. For the ones that I've watched so far, you've got those appearances by that informant character, Deep Throat, played by Jerry Hardin. You've got, I don't know if he's turned up yet, the cigarette smoking man who turns up across the series. They're all involved.
He's turned up once.
Yes, that's right. Well, these characters keep turning up and drip feeding little bits of information about they're here already and this is going on, that's going on. And that, of course, piques Mulder's interest. But it takes a long time for that to get anywhere. And then it starts to get a bit fanciful. It starts to get, as the seasons go on, you will look forward more to the standalone episodes than the arc ones, because the arc, all this stuff becomes, it's a bit like things like Lost, where you think, hang on, they've come up with this, but they don't actually know where it's going. And I think it's the same with that thread in the X-Files. They didn't quite know where they wanted to take it. And in the end, it just ends up all over the place. So you just sit back and say, okay, I don't understand this, but just tell me a story. But I think it's interesting now going back, as I've seen all these years ago, to see the seeds of all this stuff being planted. And I think it's done quite well in the first season. It's easy to follow it. And it does make you think, oh, there's a bit more to the whole X-Files thing than just investigating freaks and monsters and things. There's more going on. And I like the alien sort of conspiracy thing, but it does get a bit foggy as the series goes on. But don't let that put you off. Anything else from the first?
We're exploring X-Files.
Exactly. Any other episodes stand out from that first run? I'm looking at them. Ones I remember.
I enjoyed Born Again.
Yeah.
Which is the little girl and the sort of detective that died took over and was killing people off. Yeah. That was good. And Darkness Falls was a very good one too.
Looking at the storyline, I remember that one very well. I like those sort of ones that take them out into the wilderness sort of thing with something strange going on out of the forest.
Very much like the ice when ice.
Yeah, it's called that ice. Yeah,
very much like ice. Some ice kind of weird. Yeah,
ice. I think we said in the last episode we talked about it, and ice was very much the thing. Was that sort of Arctic base or something, some sort of parasite-y thing? Yeah, it was a good episode. So a good start then for the X-Files.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed season one. I'd recommend people, if they hadn't seen it, to give it a bash.
Excellent. On then to season two. For 2 or 3 weeks' time, whenever we get back to doing things a bit more sensibly, and to see what you make as the series is by now the series is a success, and the makers know it's going to run for a while, and they can start flexing their muscles a bit and stretching their storytelling. And season two starts introducing a lot more stuff about the disappearance of Mulder's sister, and you get more standalone episodes. There's a very good one, I think it's episode two, called The Host, which is about this sort of parasite creature, which is a great
episode. Is that the one where the black lines go across the eyes?
Not sure.
Because remember I was saying that there's a game for the PlayStation 1 of the X-Files where black ink flows across the eyes.
Yeah, that's part of the alien conspiracy thing with this black oil, which shows that people have been infected by alien stuff. And you see characters who've got this oil in their eyeballs. It's quite nasty and on their flesh and stuff. But this is stuff all starts appearing in season two. So you probably start making more of those sort of connections to the spin-off games and things. So yeah, we'll go back to exploring the X-Files in a future episode, but a good start then. Marks out of 10 for season one?
9 out of 10.
Woses, that's good. I do think that probably first 2-3 seasons of the X-File at its best. I think by about season 4, the novelty's wearing off a little bit, and you've still got Scully going, "What are you talking about, Mulder? It can't be this, it can't be that." You think, yeah, you've had about 100 episodes now. You've got to start, you know, believing this sort of stuff. But they're still good episodes all the way through the run. But for me, as it goes on, the ones I like the most are the one-off stories rather than the story arc, which, as I said, does get a little bit confusing. But we'll come back to that in a future episode. You'll notice I haven't got my sound boxes with me today. I've just realised.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been quiet.
I know. It has been quiet. Do you know where that is? I've left them in the car. They're still in the car for when we tried to record the last episode. Never brought them in the house. I'll put that right to the next episode. You can be sure of that.
So you're going to overload the next episode.
Oh, yes, I certainly am.
Oh, yeah.
That's the X-Files then. Let's wrap up with talking about a few news items. And speaking of the X-Files, rumour surfaced a couple of weeks ago that there's going to be a new X-Files series, because Hollywood will never let things die naturally. An X-Files animated series called X-Files Albuquerque, which is apparently going to be executive produced by Chris Carter, who created the X-Files and showran it and wrote a lot of the episodes. This is going to be a story, a cartoon series about young FBI agents exploring X-Files that were too weird for Mulder and Scully to investigate. It's going to be a comedy series, and it sounds absolutely dreadful. And I think, why?
Why, well, first of all, too weird for Mulder and Scully. Mulder loves the weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
The weirder, the better for him. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
So, I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope that's just one of those things that they're sort of talking about now, because it's probably easier to make animation than live action at the moment. So they might think it's possible to do something like that. In film news, it's just been announced this morning, actually, that Hollywood is now reacting to the fact that the pandemic isn't going anywhere. Tenet was released in America on the weekend, and it's done very well overseas so far, where some of the cinemas have been open for longer, and it's done quite well. But it opened in America on the weekend and only took $10 million, which is, you know, nothing. It would normally have been expected to take about $200 million. And because of that, a lot of films have now been put back. Wonder Woman, which was due out in October, has now been put back to Christmas. Candyman, which is the new horror film by Jordan Peele, based on a film that's come out in the 80s and 90s, which was supposed to come out in time for Halloween. That's now been taken off the schedule altogether. So I'm now expecting to hear before the end of the week that Bond has been put back to next year, Black Widow is put back to next year, because they've tried with a blockbuster and it hasn't worked in America. It's underperforming because of the virus and the fact that cinemas aren't open properly, people aren't enjoying going to the cinemas, they're not going, and Hollywood aren't going to risk these big tentpole films not making money. Okay, they're doing okay overseas, but that's, you know, you've got to have the big American money as well. So I think that cinema is going to be a very poor place for the next few months. I mean, as I said, I've been a few times, and I've been to see big films. I've been to see Tenet, and there were 6 people, and I was there the day after it opened. And I think if that's being repeated across America, they're not going to put these big films out there. So you do wonder if perhaps they'll bite the bullet and put them out on streaming. Could be.
Well, the thing is, the amount of cinemas that are literally just showing older films at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's I can't imagine the profits are too great, because when I went to see Jurassic Park, you know, they were barely... The cinema wasn't full, and you know, in any show, it wasn't even half full.
Well, I went to see The New Mutants a couple of weeks ago, and review online now at Starburst Magazine, and there was me and one other person in there.
Madness. So,
you know, I don't know how the cinemas are going to be able. I can't imagine it's much better in the old films they're showing. I think I will go to the cinema to see a new film, but I was going to see A Quiet Place, again with a friend of mine, which couldn't make it. So, but I would have gone to see that. But I wouldn't necessarily go to see an old film in the cinema. And a lot of people are going to feel the same. You know, if I don't want to go to the cinema to see a new film, I'm not going to go and see what I've seen already. So you do wonder, you know, Kingsman has also been put back, incidentally, which was due out this month. That's now gone back to February, I think, the new Kingsman film, which I was quite looking forward to. So I just think that we can write off this year, I think, for any sort of new mass public entertainment things. It's not going to happen, is it? We said Christmas is gone.
Go right off this year for everything, pretty much.
Yeah, the theatres aren't opening. Cinemas are struggling. It's a shame. It's a shame. Other news, though. News you're obviously pleased about. Mandalorian Season 2 starts on October the 30th. Woo! I've had my boxes. Now I've pressed the clapping one. I must actually watch Mandalorian again because it was great. I enjoyed it, but I must get myself in the right frame of mind to watch the second season.
I think I'll probably rewatch it again. The thing is, at the moment, I'm on a big Star Wars hype at the moment. I'm playing Star Wars games, watching the Star Wars films. Because the Star Wars Squadrons game is coming out in about a month's time, and I'm very, very excited to experience that.
Is that more exciting than the one you were playing the other week that you spent hours and hours and hours playing?
Probably equally exciting because they were both VR experiences, but that was like a VR experience as a lightsaber wielding sort of smuggler. This one is a VR experience in the cockpit of a TIE fighter or X-wing, Y-wing, TIE interceptor. You know, basically you're going to be flying around in a starship, fighting battles and stuff like that. So I'm very, very excited.
Oh, I bet you are. Like a pig in shit, as they say. Let's talk about briefly a couple of TV shows that have been cancelled, both of which make me go, "Nah." Nosferatu, that vampire thing with Zachary Quinto. Do your Zachary Quinto old man voice. Remember that?
Oh God, yeah, I can't.
Sort of.
Hey, Zachary Quinto.
That's so right.
That was it.
Yeah.
I am Nosferatu.
Yeah. Anyway, sadly, we won't be hearing that again as that's been cancelled. Also, canceled,
I'll remind you of it every now and then.
Oh, thank you very much. Also cancelled on, I think this was Netflix, Altered Carbon. That sort of, cyberpunky, body swappy sort of thing. Second series starred Anthony Mackie. That's now gone, which was meh. I didn't watch the second series. I think it was extremely expensive, massively expensive. And again, I think the studios are now looking at these expensive shows and thinking, how do we make this in the new world? And if it's not popular enough, it's going to go, I'm afraid, isn't it? The new Batman film, of course, this production has stopped because Robert Pattinson, the Batman, has got the old COVID, so production started up and then stopped.
It's been absolutely riddled with problems, this film. I'm really concerned about it.
It had better be good, that's all I can say. But I don't have too much hope. Speaking of superheroes, Chris Hemsworth, your actual Thor, he is making Thor Love and Thunder later this year, next year, whenever. He's just been quoted yesterday, actually, as saying, this worries me, the script is even more fun than Thor Ragnarok.
Well, that's what he wanted, wasn't it? He wanted Thor to be a bit more comedic, but Thor isn't a comedic character.
Witty, I don't mind witty, fine, but not a comedy character. But I don't think that Taika Waititi can do nuanced humour. I think everybody has to talk and... A bit like Stephen Moffat, it's all the same sort of humour that everybody does. But the only other good thing he said is, you know, Chris Hemsworth said, oh, this isn't going to be the end of my time with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He said he looks as if he's quite up to carrying on playing Thor, which would be quite useful.
He was going to stop because he wasn't happy with the character, wasn't he? Now it's gone his way and they're doing it all comedy. He seems more happy with... But, it was entertaining, Thor Ragnarok, but it wasn't Thor. Thor is meant to be very godlike, and they've turned him into a human with a big hammer.
Well, he's just like this sort of surfer boy, you know, this sort of slightly gawky, that silly slapstick humor. And the trouble was that everybody spoke the same way and everybody behaved the same way. Yeah. And I just thought, it just got irritating after a while. And I thought, well, there's no drama. There's not enough drama in it. I know you had your battles and your high stakes and things, but in the middle of that, you'd have somebody falling over or cracking a stupid joke, which just completely takes attention away for me. You know, if I want to watch a fun thing, I'll watch a comedy or something that's supposed to be fun. I don't mind a bit of wit or the odd joke in a superhero thing, but I don't want it to be a comedy because that's not what I signed up for.
It turned into Marvel's Thor slapstick.
Yeah. Thor with the laughter track, basically.
The bit that always pops into my head is the one where he throws the ball at the window and it bounces back and hits him in the face.
Oh, God.
Thor wouldn't have let that happen.
No. That's like something from a Laurel and Hardy film 100 years ago.
Yeah.
80 years ago.
I would have found it more enjoyable if he threw it, it bounced back and he just kind of grabbed it. Or ducked it or something.
Just to show his reflexes, because he's got super reflexes. But just to have a lazy joke about him being hit in the head by a ball, really, is that the level of humour we're going for here? So anyway, let's hope this new one has got a better balance to humour and drama, but I'm not holding my breath.
Natalie Portman's back in it as well, isn't she?
She's back in it, despite having said, I'm done with Marvel Universe, I don't want anything more to do with it. Now she's back. Possibly because she's not really done very much since then.
Paycheck's too big, I imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Don't blame her, but,
fair enough. New trailer for the Bond film that we mentioned. I think Bond will probably go back, but they released a new trailer. I don't know if you've seen it. Looks good. They've obviously sort of piled on a bit more.
It looks a heck of a lot more.
Yeah, it looks more like a Bond film.
Rather than nitty gritty, moody James Bond walking around going, "Where's my family?"
And people making comments about how old he is and his bad knees and things. They focused a bit more on the action. I just want to see the bloody thing. I don't know when I'm ever going to get to see it. I will be surprised if it does come out next month. But, you know, you never know. Somebody's got to break cover and give it a go. But as I said, Tenet hasn't gone down brilliantly because of all this. So we'll wait and see.
How did Disney do with Mulan? Do we know?
I don't think that's the trouble with the streaming services. They never announce figures and profits and stuff. It's all down to whether they make more of them, certainly for series and things. And I think we're probably on new territory with films, really, because the model is different in terms of how they make money and how successful things are. Apparently, Trolls World Tour, which came out at the beginning of the pandemic, that did very well. It took more money than the original one did through the people paying for to see it. So apparently it works, and I would imagine that Mulan has probably done quite well, but whether we'll ever get... We'll probably never get to hear exact numbers. We'll just be told, yes, it did very well. It covered its costs or whatever. Did you ever finish that?
No.
No.
But apparently Mulan was expected to earn $750 million.
Yeah.
But I don't think it did.
Yeah. I don't see how it could. I don't see, by having this pay-per-view thing, I don't think it could ever make that sort of money. Films, it'd probably make a profit, but not the profit it would have made if it had been in the cinemas.
The thing is, it was £20.
Yeah.
For you to have.
Yeah.
It's like having, purchasing a DVD. But when you think how many times people probably multiple times go to the cinema to watch these things. It's a bit nuts because you're going to make a loss.
It's probably a good deal for families if you've got, not that they could do it now, but if you had two or three families coming together to watch it, they could split the cost. So it's probably cheaper than going to the cinema by the time you factor in travel and popcorn and all the stuff. So I can see the appeal of doing it if you've got people who can split the cost. But it just seemed like £20 to watch a film seems like a lot to me, especially if you end up not liking it very much. You think, well, I've just wasted £20 on the film I don't like. But it just seems like
I now get to keep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Meanwhile, there are some new additions to BritBox, the streaming service that shows the best.
I don't talk to me about BritBox.
Why?
Doing my head in this. Every single time I put like a song on YouTube or something, it's the BritBox advert. And then you got, what's his face? Graham Norton What the biggest broke bird? I don't mind. I love Graham Norton, but that advert is every time I go on YouTube. It's that, and it's sounded great me a bit. Can you tell?
Have you finished now?
Yeah.
Actually, that's one thing. Just slightly talking about Cobra Kai. I liked in the second season where Johnny goes online for the first time and he gets his computer. And you see him watching all these things. And after that, he's going, oh, YouTube, all these adverts. And that's what I think. Every time you put on anything on YouTube, we've got 5 minutes of adverts first. It doesn't matter.
That's probably one of the funniest scenes I've seen.
That was so good, him trying to use the computer. When they make the video, the promotional video, he says to the girl, send it to the internet. We won't spoil it. We'll be talking about Cobra Kai in the next episode. Some new stuff has come to BritBox after the success of their Out of This World collection. They just added some new things, including all four series of BBC's Blake 7 has turned up there. Not much enthusiasm for that, I must admit. A couple of films, Quatermass and the Pit, 1 Million Years BC. And this week, I think on the 10th, all three series of the original 1970s Survivors, the Terry Nation plague drama, turns up, which if you've never seen it, I know you watched it for some of it for your homework once, but anybody who's listening who's never seen the original Survivors, watch Survivors, because it's one of my favourite TV shows of all time. It's coming to BritBox this week. Hooray! Clapping, yeah. A rumour I heard this morning, a friend sent me a message to say that apparently Joaquin Phoenix has been offered $50 million to make two more Joker films.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, money talks. I would hope that it won't happen because I don't need another Joker film. That was fine. That was great. I don't know what else you do with that.
They'll throw Batman into it now.
Well, if they sort of seeded it by having, you know, Bruce Wayne's been in it, and I just wish they wouldn't, because it wasn't in that genre. It was, and I even think it, you know, there's an argument for saying he's not even that Joker, but I don't know what else they could do with it, and you know, because the first film was very much almost like a 70s, and people have said before it was like Taxi Driver and those sort of gritty New York sort of stories, and I don't know why you'd spoil that by making it a franchise. But then, you know, as you said, money talks. It did massive business at the box office. Didn't cost a lot to make, because it wasn't a big bang superhero extravaganza. Whether they'll turn it into that, I don't know. But I wouldn't have thought Joaquin Phoenix would want to do that. He seems like an actor with a bit of integrity who wouldn't just go for the shilling. But perhaps he will. $50 million, it talks quite loudly.
So if they offered me $50 million, I would do it. Yeah.
They're not going to do that, though, Scott. It's not going to happen. They just don't want to disappoint you, but I don't think that's going to happen.
One day.
No. I know you're
we'll do it for this podcast. They'll offer us 50 mil.
I know you're a TV star now, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Tell the people about your TV experience, by the way. Your TV show was on this week.
It was. It was on CBS Reality, Murder at the Seaside. I played...
Murder by the Sea.
Murder by the Sea. Yeah. I played Paul Taylor, who was accused of murdering his wife and planning to murder his son-in-law. Very, very fun, very good. I was quite pleased with how it turned out. People who I've spoken to said it looked really good. Give it a look-see.
Yep, it's on CBS Reality if you've got it. It's on their catch-up service. What amazed me is that it was only filmed about a fortnight ago and then it's on television. It's just bizarre.
Yeah.
I did a day on it with you. And that was about a month ago. And then you came back to do other pickup shots. And I think the last one was a fortnight ago, 3 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden it's on TV. Just goes to show how quickly, I mean, they're experienced in making these sort of shows. They know how to put them together. But I was just stunned by how quickly that was on screen. And well worth a look. It's on CBS Reality, Murder by the Sea, season 5, episode 1, I think it was. Or 6.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, there's been lots of these things. But don't expect them to call you up to do Joker or Batman anytime soon. You never know. Maybe in years to come.
Yeah, well, you never know.
Any other business?
Not for me.
Fab. So there we are. That's our first lockdown quickie. We'll have another one later in the week where we'll be talking about Cobra Kai I know it's not a new show, but it's new to me. I've got around to watching it, so we'll talk about that.
It's new to Netflix. It's done very well.
And it is one of those shows that people are talking about at the moment, even though it's not new. So we'll be reviewing seasons one and two of that. A few DVD reviews. We'll be talking about Superman, Man of Tomorrow, which came out last week. The new Doctor Who DVD, Fury from the Deep. And the new Day of the Triffids, which I mentioned earlier. We'll be reviewing those. Will there be a Games Corner? I've got it down on the list. But that's up to you. No? Okay, then.
There's not been many new games out that I've been playing, but I do have the new wrestling game coming out on the 18th of September, which I'll be playing. Okay. So maybe we'll do a Games Corner for that.
Okay. Well, in that case, then we'll also be reviewing our homework, which was Colossus the Forbin Project, which was the film that I think Mr. Remsen had talked about in a previous episode, and we watched that a few weeks ago, so we'll be reviewing that as well. If you can remember having watched that, you're looking vacant, even more vacant than normal.
I certainly have remembered watching that.
Oh, good, that's all right then, because you're looking completely empty-headed.
I was just making sure all the edit points were down.
Oh, fine, fair enough. Don't spoil the magic for the children at home. So that's what we'll be doing in the next episode, which hopefully we record. It's Monday now. Hopefully we record that on Wednesday. And it'll be with you by the end of the week. Hopefully this one will be with you in a day or so as well. Anything else you want to say, Scott?
Love you.
Oh, cheers. Thank you very much. I'm quite fond of you.
Ah.
In a what a nuisance sort of way, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Anyway, that's us for now for our first lockdown quickie. We'll be back in a couple of days with some more, and hopefully in about a month's time we'll be back to normal. But God knows what's going to happen next. There'll probably be a plague of locusts or giant asteroids or
alien invasion.
Dinosaurs will suddenly appear in the Swansea Valley.
Cats will rise up and take over.
Cats have already risen up and taken over. I'm Paul Mount. Who are you?
I'm Scott Holmes.
We'll be back very soon with some more of this twaddle. Goodbye for now.
Bye for now.
You have been listening to TV Zone Plus, hosted by Paul Mount and Scott Holmes. We'll be right back.